Welcome to Northern Goal, the football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. I'm Ryan Cryle. Today I'm joined by Paul Third, Callum Law and Andy Skinner up in the north. How are we, folks?
Surviving.
We're all good. Got a nice dusting of snow up here in the north, so just hoping for the best with regards to tonight's game at Inverness, but I think it should be okay.
Spoilers for the listeners there, Andy. Okay, so there's plenty to get through today. Obviously, the festive games just keep on coming. Over the weekend, we saw Aberdeen beat St Johnstone 2-1 at Pittodrie. Ross County, their winless run went on, losing 2-0 to St Mirren in Dingwall. Cali Thistle's game's off. We've got Cove Peterhead to discuss, and there's also plenty of Scottish Cup action to round up. But first of all, back to that game at Pittodrie. Paul, you were there. I was there. Was it as poor for you as it was for me?
Absolutely. It was. How do we say this? The 90 minutes just did not quite fly by. There was not much to be writing. I think I looked at my pad at half time and I had nothing until St Johnstone had scored their goal. It was grim. The conditions were part of that, to be fair, but it didn't make for a pleasant afternoon's work, that's for sure.
Would you agree with me in the sense that St Johnstone, before we get on to refereeing decisions and things like that, but just on the balance of play, St Johnstone were probably the better team, a bit more. They were in Aberdeen's half playing a bit more than Aberdeen were in their half playing, but at the end of the day, Aberdeen come away with a 2-1 win.
Absolutely. I think St Johnstone controlled the first half especially, but they didn't really test Joe Lewis. They get that goal, but that's the only time they really got a sniff in front of the Aberdeen goal. To be fair, the Dons didn't offer anything at the other end until I think Sam Cosgrove has that shot that leads to the corner that but then all the fun and games start coming with penalty calls after that. There was so little happened, but St Johnstone had so much possession. I'd love to know what the stats were at that for the first half.
So, yeah, you've mentioned there Liam Gordon's header. That was a... I'm sure Aberdeen won't be happy with that one. Bit of a free header at the back post for him, and the way it actually ends up in the net by bouncing into the ground and then straight over the top of Joe Lewis, which Joe Lewis blamed on the pitch being a bit fiery and dry and the windy conditions, but Aberdeen's first goal. Right before it, Sam Cosgrove had a shot saved, which a pretty good effort from the edge of the box. Then Andy Considine was denied a penalty when his shot hit, I think it was Gordon again, was it? Gordon's arm?
I think so.
Callum Booth.
Callum Booth's arm. Well, I didn't think that one was a penalty. I thought it was a bit close. It looked like Callum Booth's arm was in his body to me, or close enough to his body to make it a stonewaller, shall we say. And then the penalty is given for Sam Cosgrove, goes down in the box under pressure from, was it Jamie McCart, I believe? And the referee couldn't have blown up quicker for that one. St Johnstone were raging. Aberdeen didn't seem to appeal at all for it. What's your take on that one, folks?
I think St Johnstone are right to feel aggrieved. But Derek McInnes made a valid point too when he said the Dons were denied a penalty just seconds before Cosgrove went to ground. I think it was a handball from a St Johnstone defender. He turns his back on the shot and puts his arms out to block it. He knows what he's doing from Andy Considine's shot. But the ultimate thing, I guess, is two wrongs don't make a right. But Aberdeen being awarded a penalty, for me, was the right call. It was just for the wrong incident, because the other one is never, never a penalty. But it did sum up Alan Muir's display, to be fair. He was really poor for both teams. As our colleague Eric Nicholson from the Talking Football podcast at the Courier wrote in his piece on Monday, the one thing COVID-19 has laid bare this season is the standard of our referees. They can't make the argument anymore that they're being swayed by the fans when decisions are being made in an empty stadium. Let's face it, just some of our officials just aren't very good.
What I was going to say about the penalty incidents, obviously the one that Aberdeen actually get is, you've said, Thirdy. I mean, how he's found a penalty in that, I mean, I've got no idea. It's maybe, some might say, clever play for Sam Cosgrove, perhaps, if it's in his head, you know, the referee's thinking he's maybe missed one of that and can, I'll take a tumble here and see what happens. But I mean, it's not a penalty. With a handball one, I get what you're saying, and by the letter of the current law, or by the wording of the, or by the current law, shall we say, I think that is a penalty. But to me, I mean, I think the handball law needs looked up, because what Colin Booth's supposed to do there, I'm not entirely sure. Again, it hits his elbow, but having watched it again this morning, he's about a yard away from Andy Considine. His elbow's tucked right into his side. I'm not really sure what... I mean, by the law, it's a handball, but I'm not really sure what he's supposed to do there, to be honest.
Now, I know a lot of Aberdeen fans will be saying, well, we should be a team like St Johnstone coming up here with our budget. We should be all over them. We should be playing free-flowing attacking football. We've got two up front. We should have plenty of chances, plenty of goals. All in all, though, at the end of the day, I from my perspective... I was thinking the Dons fans should be pretty happy getting the 3 points from a losing position in the conditions. Would you agree, Paul, or do you think there's cause for concern there with how they played?
The conditions were dire, and Aberdeen were not at their best, but they dug it out, which is what seems to be a Derek McInnes hallmark of his Aberdeen teams over the years. St Johnston shaded it in the first half, but their goal was the only time Joe Lewis, I think, touched the ball. The penalty, of course, I don't think there's any doubt that that changed the game, as it gave the Dons the initiative. And unlike St Johnston, they were able to make their spell on top count in the second half by scoring the second goal. But Aberdeen, Aberdeen are not free-flowing at the minute, but they're picking up points, and that's all you can ask for at this time of year when they're coming thick and fast.
That was a thing I was going to say as well. I mean, conditions is one thing, but even Ken Ryan, 30, I'm not sure what your thoughts would be, but in the second half, I thought without, you know, playing that well, they still found a way to get the second goal and then to control the game, really, and cannot cough up chances and potentially an equaliser, which if you go back to maybe home games they were involved in last season, they might not have been capable of doing that. So I think, Ken, it's so as much as I think everyone want to watch entertaining football, sometimes it's as much about finding a way, is it, as Ken trying to play with a lot of flamboyance.
I suppose at this stage now, when you know you're coming to the end of December, obviously a game against Livingston tomorrow to round off the month. But you know, until this point, you know, it's 11 points out of 15, which goes down as a decent, you know, December. Certainly considering the sticky patch that the Dons had to go through in the latter part of November. So I think there is a lot to be said for digging out these results, even if at times they haven't been at their best.
Just try to put my finger possibly on the reason why they're not as free-flowing that Derek McInnes seems to point towards. Lack of consistent selection. They've had injuries. Every time they get somebody back, somebody else goes missing. Scott Wright, for example, and the Ryan Hedges interplay he had going on, that appears to be something that they've suffered since Wright's been out injured. Ross McCrory was missing. He was suspended because of too many bookings at the weekend. Do you think they really miss him, Paul? Obviously, Lewis Ferguson was there, but it seems to be when both aren't playing, they're perhaps aren't as dominant in the middle of the park.
I don't think there's any disputing McCrory and Ferguson are Aberdeen's strongest midfield pairing. To be fair, Dean Campbell has stepped up in recent weeks, but they do lose something when McCrory or Ferguson are not in there, because the two of them just tend to overwhelm their opponents with their strength and aggression in the middle of the park. Ferguson is the more creative and attacking minded of the two, but they can both play a bit, and Aberdeen are certainly a better side when both of them are in the middle of the park.
Okay. The other thing that was brought up after the game was Ash Taylor. He scored the winning goal. Decent finish, to be fair, for the big centre-back. And his... if you've kind of been on Don's social media the last few weeks, you'll have noticed quite a lot of praise for Ash Taylor and how he's played, possibly been Aberdeen's best player or among their best players in the last three games. How good is Ash Taylor now? Is he putting to bed the bad reputation he's perhaps got? Is that unjust in the first place? What do you think?
He does get a bad rap at times, Big Ash. I think he's taken time to adjust to playing in the back three, because that has been a big change at the Dons this season. But in recent weeks especially, he's been much more focused on winning these challenges and playing the role of the dominant centre-half. Just go win the ball, whether it's in the air or on the ground, because he's such a big unit, let's be honest. He can out-muscle pretty much anyone he's up against. And I think he's now learning, because he's not a young player, but he's now showing that experience of playing to his strengths. He's been dominant, particularly on Saturday against St Johnstone and the previous weekend at Kilmarnock. He is playing very well at the minute. And in those games where you have to roll your sleeves up and get stuck in, it suits him perfectly. And that's exactly what the Dons are going to need when they go to Livingston tomorrow as well.
Okay, on that game, Dons obviously have a phenomenal record against Livingston since they came back up to the Premiership. But they're on a great run under David Martindale. It's an away game for the Dons. How do you see that one going?
It's funny, McInnes joked that Martindale was making management Lark looking easy with the start he's made at Livy. But Aberdeen do tend to come out on top against Livingston. Again, I don't think it's going to be pretty. But if Aberdeen can take all 3 points back up the road tomorrow, then they're going to be in a pretty good position heading into 2021, I'd suggest.
I think it's a game that, with the way they're playing, suits Aberdeen quite nicely, to be honest. Because, I mean, even you were speaking about maybe not being free-flowing on Saturday. Other than the first 20 minutes last week against Motherwell as well, it was pretty scrappy percentage play stuff by and large, really, and that's what it'll be again against Livingston. You win your battles and then try and play for there, and it might be a set piece, or it's one of those games that's probably got, you know, 1-0 or 2-1 written all over it. It's not hardly likely to be a thriller, I would suggest. So I think you're speaking about the way Taylor's been playing. If Livingston have J. Emmanuel Thomas playing up front again, that's a battle for Taylor to go and win. And then, you know, Ferguson and McCrory in midfield, they'll be crucial, I'd imagine, in sort of trying to get the upper hand against Livingston. And then it'll just be about trying to find that wee bit of quality at the top end of the pitch to potentially win the game.
Okay, it's Dundee United at the weekend as well, January 2nd, at home. We've kind of covered already the fact that should the Dons win both of those games, or one of those games even, they've made a pretty decent start to the season by all measures, perhaps, apart from getting that consistency of good play. But they'll have a platform from which to challenge in the second half of the campaign. Right, next up, we'll discuss Ross County's 2-0 home loss to St Mirren. Okay, I've written "oh dear" on my notes here, so you know it's bad. So, it looked, to be fair, like County almost held out despite getting two players sent off for second yellow cards in Josh Reid and Ross Draper. Andy, the Josh Reid one certainly looked like the right call to kind of silly fouls. Ross Draper, what was your take on that one?
Yeah, you're right. I think Josh Reid was guilty of a bit of naivety on both counts. I mean, he's got a good hold of Kyle McAllister's shirt on both occasions and stops him in his tracks. And I don't think, you know, there's much, you know, decision for the referee to make when you've got a situation like that. I think that was one that he'll learn from in the weeks to come. But the Ross Draper one was a wee bit different because it you know, all happened in the one incident. You know, he goes in towards Ethan Erehon, but there doesn't appear to be any contact. You know, Erehon went down very, very kind of heavily, and Draper was incensed, you know, given the apparent lack of contact. I'm a bit split because I don't think Draper should have been really shown a yellow card for that one incident, but I think his reaction as an experienced player and knowing that County were already down to 10 men, although I can understand his frustration, I think he made himself a noticeable kind of figure to the referee, and I don't think he should have been sent off for it, but I can also kind of go on the line of thinking that it was a little bit irresponsible, perhaps, from an experienced player to sort of react in that way. But certainly from that point on, County down to nine men. It was going to take a, you know, a heroic effort to you know, hold out for the point at that stage. And in the early stages of being down to nine men, they, you know, they did actually show quite a lot of resilience. It was a deflected goal that eventually broke them down. And then they lost a free header late on for the second one. But, you know, in terms of the, you know, 11 versus 11 for the 37 minutes or so that was the case, I think there was no doubt that County were the better team on the balance of play. They started the game really well. So it was a really kind of strange one to sum up, really. But just another frustrating afternoon, as they've become accustomed to in recent weeks.
I was just going to say, with the Draper sending off, and again, it was one, knowing that we'd be talking about it, I went and watched it back a few times, so I was totally clear in my mind. His reaction towards Ethan Errahan's one thing, and if Colin Stephen, the referee, had given him a straight red card for that, as much as I might have said it was harsh, I could understand it, but I don't understand how he can give him two bookings, because the challenge itself, there's no contact whatsoever. His foot's not high. He doesn't touch the ball, but he doesn't touch Errahan either, who jumps up, screams, and then rolls a boot. I mean, sending him off for the reaction's one thing, but to give him two bookings and book him for a first challenge where he's made no contact to anybody, his foot isn't high, doesn't make any sense at all to me. I mean, even if he stays on, County obviously still had an uphill task, but it's one of those things, I think, a wee bit where when you're down the bottom and things aren't going right, it's these little robs at times that always seem to go against you as well and make things more difficult.
That's just two for two on official criticising. Marcus Fraser scored County's first goal, a deflected strike. Remind the listeners, Andy, Marcus Fraser did want to leave himself, didn't he? He wasn't shown the door by County, because obviously if he was shown the door, that would be a real sore one.
Yeah, no, Marcus just decided at the end of the season that he wanted to head back down the road. He was a good servant to Ross County, came in as a young player under Jim McIntyre, had very little first-team experience, and ultimately became one of the first names on the team sheet in a, you know, a team that changed quite a lot over the period that he was there, and eventually became captain. So, you know, he was clearly highly valued by, you know, Stuart Kettlewell's management team at the time, and I don't think there was any, you know, animosity in you know, how the two parties, you know, parted ways. But, you know, he obviously felt that a new challenge at St Mirren was the right thing for him. And to be fair, he's been part of a team that's done quite well so far. And, you know, taking aside their 1-0 defeat to Hibs, which broke a good run last week, you know, that result on Saturday got St Mirren sort of back a good distance ahead of the, you know, the chasing pack down at the, you know, the bottom end of the table.
In terms of Ross County, Andy, you've seen both their games, the first two games under John Hughes. Are there sort of signs of progress there, do you think? Or what have you sort of, I know it's two sort of totally different challenges, Celtic away and then St Mirren at home, but what have you sort of made of the first couple of games under John Hughes?
The thing that really stood out to me in the Celtic game in particular, when they were under a lot of pressure, you know, Celtic did play very well that night, and they seemed to have a bit more of a backbone and a bit more resilience. You know, there were quite a lot of last-ditch tackles and, you know, goal-line clearances and things that prevented Celtic from, you know, adding to their tally. And it did seem to me as if, you know, although they did concede two goals that were, you know, preventable, there was a little bit more sign of just a defensive solidity on, you know, the balance of play. And going into the game on Saturday, when their task was to be on the front foot a little bit more, they seemed perfectly capable of rising to that. And there was a flurry early on in the game where Jack Anik in goals for St Mirren made two fantastic saves within seconds to keep out, first of all, Conor McCarthy, his own teammate who'd headed a corner back towards his own goal, and then Alex Iacovitti with a header shortly afterwards. And that was, you know, a sign of, you know, some of the threat that County were offering in the early stages. St Mirren didn't really impress me too much, but it obviously became, you know, a game that swung highly into their favour as, you know, the circumstances changed later on in the match. So I think from the early stages in that game, which would probably be the, you know, the most accurate way to read into it, I would say that there have been small signs of, you know, some sort of spark, but I guess it's not amounted to points on the board yet, and you know, crucially, not even a goal up to this point. So they'll be looking for some, you know, tangible progress in this double header that they've got coming up this week against Hibs and St Johnstone.
Fair play for putting down Conor McCarthy's almost own goal as a sign of improving Ross County spark. The games this week, Hibs away and at home to St Johnstone. Those are tough games. Do you think there's much hope of ending that winless 12 game run or scoring that first goal since mid-November?
It's a tough ask on both counts. I think the Hibs one, you might see a setup that's a bit more similar to what they lined up with at Parkhead last week. Obviously, with maybe a slight bit more expectation in terms of getting on the ball and creating. But you know, Hibs have been on really good form lately. But they have had a couple of slip ups as well. They conceded late against Dundee United in a game that they dominated. They might take a wee bit of kind of inspiration from the way that United went about that and trying to, you know, hold in firm, and, you know, if they do go behind, try to just keep it at that one to give themselves a chance later on in the match. St Johnstone at home, I guess they've got to look to just approach that the same way as they did against St Mirren on Saturday. The one man that they'll have back on Saturday available for the first time is Jason Naismith, who has been kind of sitting in the stand ever since he completed his return. He's not been eligible to play. So I think if they can get him up and running in that right back slot, that's going to be a potentially crucial signing for them, just with, you know, just how good a defender he is, but also his threat as an attacking outlet on the right-hand side. I think John Hughes has mentioned in his press conference yesterday that, you know, he's keen to make a couple of reinforcements as well quite early on in the window. Would imagine he might be looking towards the sort of the wide areas further up the park, and maybe even a striker as well, with the, you know, the expectation that Ross Stewart will probably move on at some point, whether it be January or the summer. So they'll just be hoping that they can, you know, come out of this double header with something. They then go away to Livingston on January the 9th. So they just need some spark, whether it be, you know, a point on the boards to get them going, because it's been a dire run, stretching back 12 league games, and in that time they've still only scored 3 goals. So I suppose they've made the change, they've put their trust in John Hughes now, and they need to have that first sort of glimpse of you know, what the rest of the season can hold for them.
I wouldn't go as far as to predict a win for Ross County in either of the two games this week, but I'm confident I can predict the goal drought will end, because I cannot see St Johnstone keeping a clean sheet in Dingwall. They just don't. St Johnstone are very leaky at the back, and they're giving gifts every game, and I think that will offer Ross County a bit of hope. But it's funny, we were talking about Aberdeen not being free-flowing and grinding it out. If you're a Ross County fan, you would kill to see your team just grind out and scrape a 1-0 somewhere at the minute. That run's just dreadful, really dreadful. 12 league games.
Dyson with the devil there, back in Ross County to score this weekend. Anyway, staying in the Highlands, Morton, well, Cali Thistle weren't meant to be in the Highlands.
No, that's not
Morton,
in the Highlands.
Cali Thistle, thank you, was postponed at the weekend on Boxing Day of all days. It was Cali Thistle were on the bus, I believe, by the time they even got word that the game was in trouble. John Robertson incensed by that. It's pretty bad, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there was an issue with communication. It didn't seem as if Morton had flagged up to Inverness that there was going to be an inspection, or it certainly became apparent that Inverness had to contact the league to get, you know, details about what the, you know, when the inspection was going to be. I think it was bad communication, really, and I think John Robertson was just a little bit miffed about the fact that, you know, Inverness setting out on a long journey like that weren't given a bit more time to sort of prepare for, you know, making the call of over whether to set off or not. I'm not entirely sure how far down the road they actually got, but I suppose with a journey like that, you know, they were probably right to set off. It just probably goes down as a frustrating one for them.
Boo, Morton. Anyway, good news for Cali Thistle though. Kai Kennedy will get to sign, will get to stay if he signs a longer deal with the Rangers. He's obviously been on loan and impressed in the first half of the season. That's quality, isn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, I think it makes sense for both parties involved. Well, all three parties involved. You know, Rangers, Kai Kennedy, and Inverness, because he's obviously come into, you know, the first team environment at Cali Thistle just in October when, you know, the championship season got underway. First taste of senior football, and seems to have really grasped it, taken it in his stride. So, you know, for that momentum to be, you know, disrupted by potentially going back to Rangers and not really featuring, you know, I think the continuation should stand him in good stead. Inverness will be delighted to keep him. I think from Rangers' point of view, as I say, probably not a player that's quite ready to jump straight into their first team, given how they're playing just now and given the sort of array of attacking options that they've got. So, no, I think it's a no-brainer, really, for all concerned.
And you mentioned earlier, huge game tonight in Inverness against Dunfermline in terms of the championships. Top half, do you think Inverness can pull off that result? It would be big for their season.
This would be a huge statement if they were able to win this one tonight, because for, you know, large spells this season, Dunfermline have looked like the team that's been, you know, putting up the biggest challenge to Hearts at the top. Inverness lost 3-1 on the opening day. It was a game that was in the balance for most of it, and at that stage, Inverness were kind of short of options on the bench. So, you know, as time went on, it kind of swung more into Dunfermline's favour. They were able to bring on a few game-changing substitutes, and that sort of made the difference in their favour on the day. So, I think Inverness have got, you know, the bulk of their squad back in contention now. John Robertson had said before the Morton game that he was approaching this spell of three games in a week where, you know, he was keen to freshen things up. But, you know, with the postponement of that Morton game on Saturday, it will have given some of his players a bit more time to kind of rest up. But they're obviously looking for a bit of a response themselves, because in their last outing, they slipped up at Alloa, which was a game that really, really frustrated Robertson. He just saw how much of a missed opportunity it was when, you know, if they'd held on for the victory, they would have been up into third place. They've just been on the coattails of those playoff spots all season and not managed to force their way in. So if they were to get a result against Dunfermline, then, you know, it would be a huge statement in terms of what they're kind of aiming to do in the latter part of the season.
He just took exactly what I was away to say there, Andy, at the end, but about a statement, because I think Ken Winverness, it's just been patchy here and there in terms of the odd, you know, that Alloa result and a couple others where it just, you know, sets him back. But Dunfermline have actually, with Stevie Crawford, have built a really good side, particularly some of the options they've got going forward. So if Carly Thistle could go and beat them tonight, I think it shows truly what they are capable of and that they can be in and around those playoffs. And I mean, let's be honest, we're all expecting Hearts to win it, but there's no reason, in my opinion, why Inverness couldn't be best of the rest after that.
Now we go down the leagues to League One, first of all, with Cove and Peterhead, and then we'll move on to the Scottish Cup and all the goings-on with that over the weekend. Okay, so League One, Peterhead drew 1-1 with Montrose on Tuesday, their final game of 2020, while Cove were back to winning ways via a Mitch Meganson goal, beating Forfar 1-0 away. The sides meet each other at the Balmoral Stadium on Saturday. It's the second time they've met this season in the league. Nip tuck in terms of points between them just now. Cove obviously won the first game 2-0. But Peterhead, I would suggest, are the more confident side going into this one. Callum, would you agree?
Well, whether they're the more confident side of the two is one thing, but I think certainly within themselves, Peterhead as a team are in a better place now than they were the first game. They've got slightly better options available to them again after injuries. And I mean, if they don't have a bit of confidence about them after their last three results, then when will they? I mean, in the last three games, beating Partick Thistle, beating East Fife, and then getting a decent draw against Montrose, who are sitting second in the league, Ken, you've got to be quite happy with that. I think for Cove, that win on Saturday was quite a big result, because even as much as they've sort of had 2.5 years, roughly, a sort of, you know, almost constant progression and winning every week and just confidence being sky high, regardless of who you are, when you go five games without a win, there's no doubt it must sap confidence a bit, and you start to sort of question, Ken, are we going about things the right way, and that sort of thing. So just being able to beat Forfar at the weekend, I think, will help them greatly going into this game. But I think it's quite difficult to call this game. I think before, the way things were before the first game, most people probably had Cove as slight favourites, but I think it's pretty even going into this game on Saturday. But I'd be intrigued to hear what the rest of you think.
I think it comes down to two guys, Scott Brown for Peterhead and Mitch Meganson for Cove. Whoever comes out in top, I know they play different positions, but whoever has the biggest impact on the game will decide it for their team. Scott Brown's having a very good season. Mitch Meganson is the key guy for Cove, no matter who else they've got on their side. If he's not playing, they're poorer. They're a poorer side without him. But Scott Brown's really ticking over nicely at the minute. So I think if he turns up at Balmoral and fancies it, I think Peterhead have got a good chance.
I can't even, as much as I would love to, Thirdy, I can't even argue with you too much on that one for once. But well, what you're saying about Mitch Meganson, it was interesting, actually. Before we started recording, I was speaking to Jim McAnally with a view towards the weekend and that, and the sort of respect or admiration he has for Meganson's shines through, really. And he's basically said that the sort of big conundrum he faces is how to stop him on Saturday, because if you watch Mitch Meganson, he's not like a lot of strikers in that he'll, and I mean, I think we saw even the goal he scored against Forfar, he comes short and basically looks to take it off a central midfielder or even the central defender, and then it gives your centre back a problem of, do I go with him all the way, can potentially, and leave a space in behind me, or do I just leave him and then there's potentially an overload in midfield, or he's got sort of free rein to do what he wants. So I think that's the big problem for him. Playing as he was on Saturday with Rory McAllister up front gives him a bit more scope to do that, I think, because there's not the same sort of emphasis on Mitch having to provide a focal point and lead the line, and Rory can do that. But in terms of Peterhead's attacking players, there's maybe not quite as talked about or is Meganson and McAllister, but Stephen Boyd and Lyle Cameron, for me, could be the big difference makers for Peterhead. Lyle Cameron, especially in the first half last week against Montrose, was unplayable at times. Andrew Steeves, who's a good left back at that level, was just terrorised at times by him. So if he can bring that sort of performance again against Cove, he'll be a real threat. And Stephen Boyd, maybe last week against Montrose wasn't his best game, but playing on the big park, which it is at the Balmoral Stadium, and also an AstroTurf, so you know it's not going to cut up in that. If you get him on the ball and get him sort of in pockets of space and running at defenders, he can cause real problems as well. He scored, I mean, the first two games I think he played this season, he scored two tremendous goals. I think I labelled them early goal of the season contenders, actually. So he's one of them who's potentially capable of the extraordinary on his day.
The Peterhead to Cove highway is one that's well trodden. What about Jordan Brown? He was released by Cove last week. Do you think he's heading back to Peterhead anytime soon, Callum?
Well, it's my understanding, I should say, that he will be returning to Peterhead once the transfer window opens, and there's every chance, I would imagine, if the registration and everything's completed in time, that he could be in the squad for Saturday's game. I mean, Jordan's a player, he's been a bit unfortunate, really. I was looking at the stats and he's only played three times this season for Cove, and it's a strain. I know Paul Hartley's got a lot of options, but it sort of baffled me slightly why that was, because particularly in the the Forfar game, the run Cove have been on where they've been, you know, losing games and that, or drawing games, in those sort of situations when you're chasing a goal or needing a goal, coming off the bench, there's at that level there's few better than Jordan. He has he did it plenty at Peterhead the first time around. He's just got some sort of knack of popping up in the right place and getting you a goal, especially coming off the bench. So I mean, if he does complete his move back to Peterhead, I think he'll be a decent, especially with his sort of versatility in the forward areas, he'll be a decent signing. And it's worth pointing out just as well that he was a player that Jim McAnally didn't want to lose when he left 2.5 years ago, but the lure of sort of, I think, getting to start a few more games at Cove and also being part of the, you know, a side that was looking to achieve that historic promotion and things, I think that was sort of what swayed him. But he was a player Jim's always regarded very highly and didn't want to lose.
Okay, so we'll move on then to the Scottish Cup over the weekend. We'll start with the ties that have already taken place before looking ahead to the draw for the next round. For me, the highlight was obviously Bucky Thistle beating Albion Rovers 3-0. What about you guys?
It was Bucky for me as well. I think you looked at that game and thought, well, Bucky have got a chance of taking a scalp, but I don't think any of us would have predicted they'll go and score three and keep a clean sheet. Likewise, Keith, they dug deep to beat Hillabeath Hawthorne. And I suppose we've got to give Banksodie a shout out as well, because their 3-0 win at Lothian Thistle, Hutchison Vale, caught the eye as well. Their reward, of course, is going to be a trip to Fraserburgh in the second round, which is a tall order for them, but I suppose they'll be looking at it and thinking, well, there's no surprises. Both teams will know all about the strength of the opposition, so it'll be at the tie the round for me, if I'm looking with our local hat on. But of course, if Brora can get through, we've got a belter to come as well.
The result I was going to mention, Bucky was probably, just because it was a League Two side as well, they were playing as the one that stood out most. But Nairn County defeating Broxburn Athletic on penalties to get through. I mean, Broxburn are a side, they're playing in what's now a very sort of competitive East of Scotland league, a lot of good teams in there, and they reached the fourth round of the Scottish Cup last season, beating Cowdenbeath and Inveroorie Locos on the way, and it was St Mirren that put them out, which, you know, they've got that, clearly got a decent side, and they've got a bit of cup pedigree and a few sort of ex-SPFL players in their ranks as well. So for Nairn to manage to beat them, even if it did come down to penalties, I thought it was a really good result. And you mentioned Keith Thirdy. It's funny how these things work. They waited 25 years for a home win in the Scottish Cup, and now they've had two in the space of a month. So fair play to them. And I must say, you mentioned in Fraserburgh Banks ID as well, I was at Rothes against Fraserburgh on Saturday, and it was a hugely impressive performance from the Brochery. Dominated basically from start to finish. And I mean, Rothes opened to scoring against her on a play, and you thought maybe that'll just change things, but it was pretty ruthless stuff from the Broch. So that tie with Banks ID is nicely set up. I would suggest another one I was going to flag up quickly for Martin going down to Haddington Athletic. Probably a tie they'd been expected to win, but it was it took a sort of late show. Scott Lyle with a minute to go getting the winner, but that's a good result for them away from home, and I'm sure they'll fancy their chances against Annan Athletic in the next round, who they beat 4-0 at a similar stage 4 years ago. So some good, and that's one of quite a few good ties in there in the next round.
Andy, Bucky Thistle, Cali Thistle's a tasty one, isn't it?
Oh, fantastic. I think the biggest sort of disappointment is that there will be no fans there. I think you might have been at a game a few years ago where Elgin drew Cali Thistle, and I think there was something like 3,500 there. I think that's one that really, you know, a tie this time around that will really have captured the local imagination. So for that to, you know, inevitably go ahead behind closed doors is going to be really disappointing. But no, there's certainly going to be an edge to that one. You know, Bucky will go into it fearing nothing at all, you know, off the back of their result down at Albion Rovers. That's got the makings of a great tie, and one that, you know, Inverness won't treat lightly, I'm sure. But I was going to mention Nairn as well before Callum jumped in as well. That was a hugely impressive result from Ronnie Sharp's side, and I think all the more impressive considering how stop-start Nairn's season has been. You know, there was obviously the you know, the COVID situation that put the brakes on them starting their Highland League campaign. But off the back of a really comfortable win against Thrieve Rovers in the last round to step up to a, you know, a bigger challenge and defeat Broxburn on penalties, that was a huge result for them. And they've got a home tie against a high-flying Montrose team to look forward to. So, some real Highland League success stories and a good kind of representation in the second round, which is brilliant to see.
Is Kane Hester the best player in the world, Andrew?
He's the best player since Shane Sutherland. No, I think he's certainly filling that void. We all spoke at the start of the season of the need for someone to step up and you know, deliver the goals, be that talisman for Gavin Price, and Kane Hester has stepped up to the mantle. That's 11 goals now. Just a guy that they can rely on in just about any game to come up with the goods. That was a potentially tricky tie on paper. Civil Service Strollers are kind of mid-table in the Lowland League, and Elgin have had a few difficult tests against teams from that level before, but by all accounts, you know, Civil Service started quite well in the game, but you know, ultimately a very, very comfortable and one-sided result. And another goal for Russell Dingwall as well, who's kind of not to the same goal-scoring level as Kane Hester, but he's chipping in from midfield as well. So there's a lot to be, you know, encouraged by for Elgin. And they've got a tasty tie in the next round at home to Ayr United as well, which, you know, could have the makings of a really good one. I'll certainly fancy giving the Honest Men a good game in that one. So, lots to look forward to.
I was going to add as well, it would be remiss of us not to mention the McCaskill brothers and what they did on Saturday. Andrew plays for Bucky and Craig plays for Keith, both scoring direct from corner kicks. To me, that's one of those ones, is it, in a some sort of a quiz in many years' time. That's the sort of the answer that will leave many people stumped. I mean, it's rare enough, isn't it? Getting anybody scoring direct for a corner, but two brothers in the same day. It's sensational stuff, I would say.
He also mentioned the Scott Lyle goal, which I thought was pretty impressive. Quite a good finish on the angle. Rocketed in the far corner. Anyway, so to complete the list of second round ties, we've already sort of mentioned quite a lot of them, but Aloe Athletic will host Cove, Bucky Thistle, Cali Thistle, of course, big game. Camelon or Brora will play Heart of Midlothian. I should have just said Heart, shouldn't I? Anyway, Dumbarton will meet Huntly, Arcumbernauld Colts, Elgin City against Ayr United, Fermartin against Annan, Fraserburgh Banks a day, big one that for us, Keith against Clyde, Nairn County Montrose, Peterhead, Stenhouse Muir. Right, if there's nothing else to say then, anyone got anything to add on those ties?
I was going to say,
I would hope Brora can pull it off, really.
I have to hope Brora pull it off, because I think that's a game that's destined to be a television choice if it, well, no matter who goes through, and, you know, Brora will certainly want to sort of be the, you know, part of the highlight tie of the round on a national level. Again, it would be frustrating to not have fans there, but in terms of what that game would do for their profile, I think it would be a hugely frustrating one if they weren't to come on out on top against Camelon.
I was going to just add quickly on Huntley's game on Wednesday against Cumbernauld Colts. It's a big game for Huntly. I mean, it's been quite a number of years since they've won two games in the Scottish Cup, and then had quite a decent looking tie against an SPFL side. So it would sort of be, I mean, this season as well for all the clubs, with the financial implications of COVID, a decent cup run with the prize money it brings is always welcome. But that would be a sort of big step for Huntly if they could enjoy that away day against Dumbarton, who they famously, it's one of the Huntly opponents they like to play back in the day. Steve Patterson's team gave Dumbarton a bit of a doing down at Boghead. A bit better just mention a Dave McGinley double it was that day. Well, his son Max is playing for Huntly this season, so maybe it'll be history repeating itself to some degree if Huntly can get through.
That's why we get you on.
Oh, definitely.
Anyway, let's hope we get to see the shafted by the SPFL derby between Brora and Hearts. That concludes this week's episode of Northern Goal. Thanks to Paul, Callum and Andy for joining me today. Cheers, guys.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, Ryan. Cheers,
you're
lads.
Welcome.
If you've enjoyed the episode, you can like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever app you use. You can email us at northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk. Finally, enjoy whichever football game you're streaming this week. Cheers. Oh, and by the way, Happy New Year. Hope you loved the episode, and if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.